dock, which was filled with sprinting soldiers, the frontrunners preparing to leap.
"Come on, wind," Arryn shouted. "Don't be the one damn time you refuse to blow."
As if answering the call of its master, the wind howled in from the east, the sails snapping taut. The ship lurched as three of the soldiers jumped, their arms flailing as they fell into the water instead of onto the deck. The ship collided with another vessel with a loud crunch, the other crew shouting and swearing as they scraped the length of it, slamming into another ship, then another, as Arryn used the strength of the wind to force their way through. Soldiers ran in all directions, leaping onto ships in an attempt to reach their target, but they were too slow. Except in the distance, naval vessels were swarming with sailors making ready for pursuit.
"Can you outrun them?" Laura demanded.
Arryn nodded, his eyes fixed on their progress through the crowded harbor. Bells clanged riotously in the city.
"Shit!" Arryn shouted. "We need to get past the breakwater before they lift the chain."
Laura's gaze skipped across the water to the twin towers flanking the gap in the breakwater, to the heavy steel chain that was creaking upward.
"Full sail!"
The deck was organized chaos as the Ithaconians hauled on lines, white canvas streaming skyward. The ship leapt across the waves toward the gap, but the chain was rising just as fast. Even if they managed to get across, it would tear loose the rudder and they'd be easy pickings for the Maradrenian Navy.
"We can't hit that gap with full sail," Jor shouted. "We'll be tossed up on the rocks." "Get them up," Arryn ordered. "All of them."
Laura clung to the rail, her hair whipping out behind them with the speed of their progress. Yet the expressions on the crew's faces told her it wasn't enough, that they were headed toward a disaster that would see them all drowned or captured, which would amount to the same thing. And there was nothing she could do to save them. Even if she jumped overboard, the ship would be trapped. Saren and her father would never let them go free. Slamming her fists on the rail, Laura snarled in wordless fury, despair carving her insides hollow. Despite everything, her father was going to win. Arryn's hand caught hers.
"The wind. It gusts around the hill and through the gap in the breakwater. If we time this just right, it might work."
"What might work?" The chain was perilously close.
"You'll see."
He shot her a grim smile.
"Hold on to the rail, and for the love of God, don't let go."
Then he let go of her hand and heaved on the wheel. As he did, an enormous gust of wind struck them broadside. The rigging groaned, ropes and wood and canvas straining, on the verge of snapping, and the ship keeled over. Further and further, Laura shrieked, clinging to whatever she could, certain the vessel would capsize. The ship shuddered. A loud scraping filled Laura's ears as the chain dragged along their port side. The noise was horrific, wood splintering and cracking, their speed flagging even as the wind eased, the ship slowly righting itself.
"Come on!"
Arryn shouted, while Laura stared up at the soldiers manning the breakwater towers, their eyes wide with astonishment. Then they were through. Regaining her footing, Laura stumbled to the side of the ship to look back. Arrows rained down on their wake, fired more in desperation than at any chance of hitting a mark. Nor, she thought, would they risk the catapults mounting on the hills. Her father wanted them captured, not dead. The Maradrenian vessels were crowded up behind the now fully raised chain, the captain shouting at those manning the towers.
"It will take them a bit of time to get the chain reversed. They might chase us all the way to Southwatch."
Arryn's eyes shifted to the black clouds hanging over the dark ocean, promising wild seas.
"The race is on."
The naval vessels gave up chase halfway to Southwatch, though whether it was for fear of the storm brewing in the east or the dozen shipbreakers on the fortified island, it was impossible to say. Docking the ship at Southwatch Wharf was no mean feat, and Laura's whole body ached with tension as Arryn eased the battered ship against the stone. Ithaconian crews on land using rigging attached to the wharf to tie the rocking ship down.
She, Auron, and the rest of the crew disembarked swiftly, meeting an older Ithaconian man at the guardhouse, mounted where the wharf met the island.
"We did not realize you were in Vencia, Your Grace."
The man bowed with more formality than anyone at Midwatch ever used. His gaze skipped past his king to land on Laura, his eyes widening as he inclined his head to her.
"Unplanned trip. Where's the commander?"
Auron's voice was crisp and unwavering, but his left hand clenched and then opened in a repetitive motion that betrayed him. He was not looking forward to justifying himself to his sister. That much was certain.
"Off island, Your Grace. She left this morning to deal with a conflict on Karin, and I expect she'll need to ride out this storm there."
Auron's hand relaxed.
"Tell her I'm sorry to have missed her, but we cannot linger. Have the ship stripped and then sink it." "As you say, Your Grace."
Bowing once again, the man continued down toward the ship, shouting orders as he went. Laura cast a backward glance at the battered vessel. "Why sink it? Can't you just repaint it?"
"No time to return it to safe harbor before this storm hits. The sea will tear it apart and sink it anyway if we leave it here, which could cause problems with other ships trying to make port. Anna will cut my balls off if she has to deal with cleaning up that sort of mess."
"I get the impression that she'll be reaching for her knife anyway when she discovers where you've been." He laughed, his hand falling against her lower back to guide her up the path.
"A little luck on our side that we missed her then."
"Will she let it go?"
"Not a chance, but hopefully she won't feel inclined to follow us all the way to Midwatch to voice her opinion on the matter."
"Your bravery is inspiring."
"We all have our fears. Now let's get inside before the rain hits."
They didn't linger in the Southwatch market, which would have been a disappointment to Laura if she hadn't burned with urgency to return to Midwatch. The market was a series of large stone warehouses, plus one smaller building that Taryn told her was where all the trade was conducted. She longed to see what was inside those buildings, what sort of goods had come from Harrendell, Amarid, and beyond, and what would depart from her own homeland. Just as she now found herself longing to talk to the Ithaconians who lived and worked here on Southwatch, to know them in a way she, out of necessity, hadn't allowed herself to before. Because now they felt as much her people as the Maradrinians she'd left behind. On the heels of that realization came a deep and unceasing shame that she, who was their queen and whom they believed to be their defender, had nearly put them on the funeral pyre. Men, women, and children. Families and friends. Most who were innocents dedicated to no more than living their lives, those people, as much as Auron, would have been the individuals she'd have betrayed if her words had reached Saren and her father. With that knowledge burning in her heart, she was glad when Aaron and his guards led her into the yawning black mouth of the bridge. The bridge. How she hated the cursed thing, which was the source of every bit of despair in her life. With every step she took down its stinking length, she wished it didn't exist, wished she'd been sent to Ithacana with no agenda beyond being a wife, wished she was not her wicked, lying, and traitorous self. But wishes were for fools, which was perhaps fitting because her foolish self lost all grasp of logic whenever her sleeve brushed against Auron, every time his gaze fell upon her, every time she remembered the feel of his hands on her body and how much she desired them there again. There was no day or night on the bridge, only endless, musty darkness. The storm caused a moaning sound within the tunnel, sometimes little more than a whisper, and other times a deafening roar that forced the group to stuff cotton into their ears. It was like a living beast, and by the end of their first day of walking, Laura was half convinced that she'd been consumed. She could not stay in Ithaconna, even if she wanted to. And she did want to, more than anything. But her entire relationship with Auron had been built on a lie, and if she told him the truth, what were the chances he'd forgive her? He loved his people too much to allow someone like her to remain his queen. Neither was keeping it a secret an option. Her father would make her pay for her betrayal. There would be no happily ever after. not for her. Reluctantly, a plan formed in Laura's mind. Her first order would be to destroy the papers with her planned invasion. Then she'd wait for a clear night and make a run for her hidden canoe and supplies. All that would be left to do would be to sail toward revenge, because she fully intended to make her father pay for what he'd done to Moradrina, what he'd intended to do to Ithacana, and what he'd done to her. Plotting the variables distracted her, took away the tightness that gripped her chest every time she realized she'd never see Arryn again. From time to time, they encountered groups transporting goods. Bored donkeys pulled carts filled with steel, fabrics, and grain southward. Men with handcarts transported crates of Alcotton glassworks northward. And once, after following a stream of spilled ale for several miles, they passed a wagon full of barrels headed north. Jor had jokingly put his head under the leaky barrel until Arryn kicked his feet out from under him, then informed the man driving to quit making a mess of his bridge. Sometimes there were merchants in the caravans, but always they were flanked by Ithacanian guards wearing masks. Before encountering any of them, her own group would don identical masks, and Laura idly wondered what the merchants would think if they knew the rulers of Ithacana had passed them in the darkness. They made camp in the bridge two nights in a row, eating cold rations they'd picked up at Southwatch, with only water to drink. The guards took rotating shifts on watch, everyone sleeping with only their pack for a pillow and their cloaks for blankets. Privacy was non-existent, and by the third day of walking, Laura was almost frantic to be free of the place.
"Home, sweet home," Jor said,
and the rest of the group stopped, silently watching while the captain rested both hands against pressure points on the bridge wall. A soft click filled the air, and a door-sized block of stone swung inward on silent hinges, revealing a small chamber with an opening in the floor. Jor stepped inside and looked down.
"Tide's still too high. We'll have to wait a bit. I'm taking Laura topside,"
Arryn abruptly stated.
"The rest of you wait down here."
No one said anything. Taryn and Jor silently opened the hatch in the ceiling. Arryn boosted Laura up, then hauled himself outside. Leaving the hatch open, he walked several dozen paces down the length of the bridge. Laura followed, stopping next to one of the thick steel rings embedded in the rock that the Ithacanians used for their zip lines. The storm had been short, ending on their second day in the bridge, although another was brewing on the horizon. Yet for now, the sky around Midwatch was clear and sunny, the water below a tranquil blue. The fresh air and open space instantly relieved the oppressive pall the bridge had cast.
"We need to talk, Laura."
Her heart skittered, her veins flooding with trepidation.
"I know you're a spy for your father."
Her stomach hollowed.
"I was a spy for my father. I am no longer. I'm going to need more proof than just your word."
"The proof is that I'm here, with you." Silence. When Laura's nerve finally frayed, she asked,
"Aren't you going to say something?"
Arryn turned to face Midwatch, tension radiating off him.
"I suppose one question is obvious. Did you pass any information back to him that I should know about?"
"I've given him nothing." Because she hadn't. Not one single thing.
"Not with all those damnable pieces of paper still sitting in his desk, waiting for her to destroy them."
"I suppose that's something."
Something. The need for him to know the reason behind her actions burned in Laura's chest.
"Saren and my other teachers, they lied to me. All my life, they lied about the nature of Ithacana, about the relationship between your kingdom and mine. They painted you as a dark oppressor that used its power over trade to suppress my people, to control them, to starve them, all for the sake of profit. They told me that you killed merchants and sailors for no reason other than that they'd come too close to your shores, not just killed, but maimed and tortured for sport, that you were a demon."
Arryn said nothing, so she continued. They made me believe that doing this would save my people, that it was righteous. Now I understand that that's why they kept me locked up in the compound, so I might never learn the truth. And they believed you would keep me similarly contained so that I would have no chance to learn the truth until it was too late.
And what is the truth?
What was the truth? Laura had no delusions that she was a good person in the way of someone like Marisol. She'd killed Valcotton warriors brought to her compound for no reason other than it was their lives or hers. Learned countless ways to torture, maim, and kill. She'd stood by while the servants who'd cared for her and her sisters since they were children were murdered in cold blood. Had watched while the man who'd been like a father to her slit his own throat out of misplaced guilt. She'd lied and deceived and manipulated and nearly doomed an entire nation. Good, she was not. Yet neither did she believe that she was evil. She'd condemned herself to this fate in order to save the lives of her sisters, whom she loved above all things. And once here, she'd followed through with her mission on the belief she was saving her people. Noble motivations, perhaps. Except she wasn't entirely certain that they absolved her of guilt. Knowing what would happen to Ithacana, she'd still written instructions on how to destroy it. She'd made that choice. All she could do now was try to atone. The truth is that I am the villain. But she would play that part no longer. More silence. What are you going to do with me? She asked.
I don't know, Laura.
With his words, the tension between them ratcheted up.
I've suspected it for some time now, but hearing you say it, I don't know.
A frantic fear fluttered in her chest. A fear that she'd lost him, that he hated her, that he'd never forgive her. I didn't give him anything, Auron. She so desperately wanted to salvage what was between them. I haven't done anything.
Haven't done anything?
He whirled around to face her.
How can you claim that? How can you say you've done nothing when from the moment we were married, you've been plotting to stab me in the back? Everything you've said, everything you've done, everything between us has been a damned lie. A way to manipulate me into trusting you so that you could learn Ithacana's secrets and then use them against us. All while I, like a bloody fool, was trying to win you over.
It was the truth. But it wasn't the sum of it, because during that time she'd grown to care about him and his kingdom, to understand their plight, and still she'd chosen to destroy them. Had written every detail she'd learned on those pages, a strategy for invading Auron's homeland and stealing away the bridge his people so desperately needed. It had only been sheer luck that one of those pages hadn't made it into her father's hands.
Did you care at all? He demanded.
Yes, more than you know, more than I can explain. She shoved the hair that had blown into her face out of her way, grasping for words to make him understand. But I didn't think there was another way. I believed the only chance my people had was for me to win them the bridge. My whole life has been dedicated to giving them a better future, no matter the cost to me. Surely you of all people can understand that.
It's not the same. The better future you envisioned was built on the back of Ithacanian corpses.
Laura closed her eyes. And why didn't you just kill me once you knew? Why did you bring me to Ventzia if you suspected? Why did you risk so much? Auron scuffed his boot against the bridge, staring at Midwatch.
I realized that you'd been misled. And if the truth gave us a chance, then it was a risk I was willing to take. I followed you that night when you walked up to the palace gates. I pointed an arrow at your back, and I almost did kill you. If you'd taken one more step, I would have.
His hands were shaking, the tremor of movement holding her attention like a vice.
But then you turned around and came back. back to me.
I couldn't do it.
Laura closed her hands over his, needing to stop them from shaking.
And I won't. Not ever.
Not even if he tracks me down and kills me for betraying him.
Arryn went very still.
Did he threaten you?
She swallowed hard. He told me on the ship to Ithacana that if I failed, or if I betrayed him, he'd hunt me down.
If he thinks...
A scuffle of sound interrupted him, causing them both to jump. Seconds later, with a muttered oath, Anna pulled herself out of the hatch, her face a storm cloud. Arryn stepped in front of Laura, walking toward Anna even as his sister closed the distance with rapid strides.
What the hell were you thinking? Going into Maradrina yourself? Have you lost your bloody mind?
I've been dozens of times before. What of it?
Not as king, you haven't. You have a responsibility to our people. Plus, you nearly got caught. What the hell would have happened if you had?
Then you'd have your chance at the crown.
You think that's what I want?
Her eyes went past her brother, landing on Laura.
And there stands the worst of it. Bad enough that you went, but you took the daughter of our enemy? The woman who, if all the rumors are true, you've been plying with all of Ithacana's secrets, back to her homeland?
I took my wife to her homeland, for reasons that are none of your goddamn business.
Anna's face took on a ghastly pallor, but she balled her hands into fists, and for a heartbeat, Laura thought she'd strike her brother, strike her king. But all she said was,
There is no reason good enough. She knows enough to allow Maradrina to bring us to our knees, and you practically delivered her to its king. She could have run straight into the magpie's arms.
She didn't.
But what if she had? This wasn't the plan. You were supposed to...
I was supposed to what?
Arryn lunged forward, looming over his sister.
Keep her locked up here forever. She's my damned wife, not a prisoner.
Wife? In name only, from what I hear. And don't think that everyone doesn't realize that you're risking your entire kingdom just to get between her legs.
No one spoke. Not Arryn or Anna. Not the soldiers who'd come topside and were now looking anywhere but at their leaders. And not Laura, whose heart felt like it was about to burst from her chest. It was racing so hard, because Anna's fears were valid. Yet Arryn was defending her. Despite knowing she'd come to Ithacana with ill intentions, he was defending her right to a life. Her right to a home. Her right to freedom. And she didn't deserve it. Didn't deserve him. Before Laura could think through the consequences of what she intended to say, she stepped forward, her boots sliding on the slick surface of the bridge.
Anna,
stay out of this! Without looking, the other woman swung an arm to block Laura's path. The blow caught Laura in the chest, and she stumbled back, feet scrabbling.
She was falling.
Laura! Arryn reached for her, but it was too late.
She screamed, arms flailing as the air rushed past her, but there was nothing to grab, nothing that would stop the inevitable. She slammed against the water, the force driving the wind out of her in a rush of bubbles, even as she plunged down and down. Panic raced through her, wild and unchecked, and on its heels came the desperate need to breathe. She kicked, thrashing her arms, fighting toward the surface that seemed impossibly far away.
You will not die. You will not die. You will not.
The thought faded, and the light of the surface began to dim as she sank into the depths, until something grabbed her around the waist. Laura struggled, reaching blindly for her knife until her face broke the surface and Arryn was shouting in her ear,
Breathe, Laura!
She gasped in a desperate mouthful of air, and another. A wave rolled over her head and fear filled her anew. Clawing and gasping, she tried to climb, tried to get above the water. Then Arryn's face was in front of hers.
Quit fighting me! I've got you, but you need to be still!
It was an impossible request. She was drowning. She was dying.
I need you to trust me.
His voice was desperate, and somehow it cut through her fear.
brought her back to herself. She quit fighting him.
Good. Now hold on to me and don't move.
Grasping hold of his shoulders, Laura forced her shaking legs to still. They were not quite beneath the bridge, perhaps 24 yards from the nearest pier. The narrow one with no access to the bridge. And the shore.
Can we make it?
She asked, spitting out a mouthful of water as another wave splashed her in the face.
No.
What do we do? She twisted, looking up at the bridge. She could hear the soldiers shouting, see Jor hanging off the side from a rope, his finger pointing at the water.
Quit moving, Laura.
She froze, because in that moment she saw what Jor was pointing at, what had Auron's attention and his fear. Gray fins cut through the water, circling them, moving closer.
We have to last until they can reach us in a boat.
Her eyes jerked to the distant pier, the opening still concealed by the tide. Then to the cove where two boats had been launched. There was no way they'd make it in time. As if to punctuate her thought, one of the sharks darted toward them before veering off at the last second.
Shit!
The creatures were swimming closer, and Laura sobbed as something smacked against her foot. The soldiers above began firing arrows, the bolts slicing into the water all around them, blood blossoming when they struck true. Then, seemingly as one, the fins disappeared. Arin! Anna's scream echoed from above, and a second later, an enormous fin was slicing through the waves toward them.
Let me go.
Laura made the decision because she knew he wouldn't.
Without you, I'll drown, but if you let it have me, you'll have a chance.
No.
Don't be a fool. We don't both have to die.
Quiet.
Arin's eyes were fixing on the circling shark.
I know you, old girl.
He muttered at it before glancing up.
You'll come in for a taste before you come from below for the kill.
Let me go.
No.
Laura shoved away from him, tried to swim, but Arin dragged her back, kicking hard, pulling her with him. The shark darted toward them. So fast, too fast to dodge, infinitely too fast to outswim. Fear, primal and base, took hold of her, and Laura screamed.
Now!
A steel bolt attached to a cable sliced through from the air above, exploding through the shark's side. But the creature kept coming as though the instinct to hunt mattered more than the wound it had been dealt. Laura screamed again, choking on water, watching it drive toward them, mouth opening to reveal row after row of razor-sharp teeth. The cable attached to the bolt went taut. In one violent motion, the shark was ripped up and out of the water, its enormous body thrashing through the air before it slammed down against the sea, fighting against the cable, leashing it to the bridge. Water surged over Laura's head, and the shark's tail slammed against her with the force of a battering ram, tearing her from Auron's grasp. She floundered, not knowing which way was up, not knowing where the shark was, where Auron was. Bubbles raced past her face, obscuring her vision while she kicked and fought. Then hands closed on her wrist, pulling her to the surface.
Swim!
It wasn't Auron's voice, but those from the soldiers above. Anna's voice, loudest of all.
All the blood is drawing them in! Swim, goddamn you!
He dragged her through the water, the waves growing more violent with every surge. And above, the skies grew darker. Lightning flashed in the distance. Auron stopped swimming. He treaded water, his breathing ragged with the effort of supporting them both. Laura saw what he was looking at. The nearest pier, bristling with metal spikes, the ocean slamming against it with the ferocity of the coming storm.
You need to grab one of the spikes. Don't let go.
And without waiting for her to respond, he hauled her toward the pier. The waves caught hold of them with irreversible momentum, launching her and Auron at the stone and steel. There would be one chance. Only one chance. Laura sucked in a deep breath, marking the spike she'd reached for. The steel that would be her salvation or her damnation. Auron twisted at the last minute, taking the impact. Laura fumbled blind, knowing she had only a second. Her hand closed on the spike, even as she felt Arin let her go. Holding on took all her strength as the water dragged at her legs, her arms shaking with the effort. For a moment, her body hung out of the water, then the waves crashed into her again. She clung to the metal, managing to get her legs over and around it, breathing as the water retreated again. Arin! She searched the water for him, terror filling her heart.
Here!
He was dangling from the spike where it was embedded in the rock, but he wouldn't last long. The water pummeled them again. Then, above the noise, Laura heard her name. Looking up, she saw Anna, dangling from the rope above, another line in her hand. She swung it in Laura's direction. Grab hold! The heavy rope whipped past, and Laura reached for it, nearly losing her grip as she did. Again and again, the rope swung past her, but she couldn't reach it, and Arin was running out of time. So when the rope swung past once more, Laura lunged, knowing that if she missed, she'd fall in the water, and that Arin was past the point where he could help her, but that he'd try anyway. Her balance wavered, her fingers reaching and grasping and catching hold of the rope. Laura's legs slipped and she was dangling. Silently thanking Eric for every pull-up he'd forced her to do during training, she hauled herself up, hooking the loop under her armpits. Swinging hard, she caught hold of the spike and crawled hand over hand toward Arin, barely keeping her grip as the water surged and dragged against her, half drowning her with every pass. Grab onto me, she screamed, even as a wave knocked her free from her perch. She half swung, half fell, slamming against Arin. Instinct had her wrapping her legs around his waist, her arms screaming as his weight dragged against her. Then he was reaching up and taking hold of the rope. The sea hurled against them once more, driving them both against rock. And Laura choked and sobbed, knowing she couldn't hold on anymore, knowing that one more wave would pull her free. And it was coming, froth flying towards her. Just before it reached them, the rope jerked, and they were rising, faster and faster. They rotated and swung, Arin pulling himself up so that her legs, still wrapped around him, eased the pressure on her arms.
Do not let go. Blood trickled down a cut on his temple. You will not let go.
They bumped against the side of the bridge, and Laura whimpered as she was dragged along the rock. But the pain fled in the face of relief as hands grabbed hold of her clothing, hauling her up, laying her down on the solid surface of the bridge. Gasping, she rolled on her side, puking up endless amounts of seawater until all she had the strength for was resting her forehead against the wet stone.
Laura!
Arms pulled her upright, and she turned only to collapse against Arin's chest, clinging to his neck. She could feel him shaking, as spent as she was, yet the feel of him against her was more comfort than the solid land beneath her feet. No one spoke. There were men and women all around them, she knew, but it was as though she were alone with him, the rain from the coming storm pattering against her cheek. Arin! Anna's voice broke the silence, the distant boom of thunder echoing his name. I didn't mean... it was... Laura felt him stiffen, felt his anger.
Get back to Southwatch, Commander, and if I see your face before war tides, rest assured that I won't hesitate to fulfill Ithacana's contract with Herondale.
Laura turned in his grip in time to see Anna jerk as though she'd been slapped. Yes, Your Majesty. Without another word, she walked away, her soldiers following on her heels. Rising on shaking legs, Arin pulled Laura with him.
We need to get back to Midwatch. The storm is coming.
But as her heart thudded inside her chest, Laura knew that he was wrong.
The storm was already here.
Pulling off the boots he'd borrowed at the barracks, Arin slowly stripped his sodden and torn clothing, leaving it in a pile on the floor while he eased across the dark room to the wardrobe to retrieve dry trousers. The shutters rattled against the windows as the wind attacked, the rain drumming furiously against the roof, all of it drowned out by bursts of thunder that shook the house to its foundations. The air was full of the sharp, fresh smell of ozone, blending with the ever-present scent of damp earth and greenery that he associated with home. Boom! The ground beneath his feet reverberated, the pressure changing as the typhoon descended in full force. This was a beast of a storm, the sort that gave the Tempest Seas their name. Winds so wild and feral, they seemed almost sentient. This storm would leave swaths of destruction in its wake, and anyone or anything caught out in the water would be wiped from the face of the earth. Ithacana was built to endure the worst the sea and sky could unleash, and indeed it was only during these tempests that Arryn ever truly breathed easy, certain that his kingdom was safe from its enemies. But not tonight. Exhaling, he rested a hand against the post of his bed, searching for some sense of equilibrium. But it was a lost cause, like so many other things. Laura hadn't said a word since they'd been pulled from the sea. He couldn't blame her. She'd been nearly drowned, nearly eaten, nearly pummeled against storm-tossed rock. That she hadn't broken down entirely should have felt like a small miracle, except that he would have preferred that to the emotionless silence. Face blanched so white, her lips were gray, Laura had followed numbly where she'd been led, her arms limp in his grasp, as she'd been examined for injuries. No sign of her dry humor or the venomous tongue that he simultaneously loved and loathed. Just nothing. Closing his eyes, Arryn rested his forehead against the bedpost because the other option was to rip it free and smash it against the wall of his room. Fury, unbridled and burning, rushed through his veins. At Anna, at the bridge, at himself. A sound more animal than human rose in his throat, and in a flurry of motion, he twisted and slammed his fist against the wall. Pain blossomed in his knuckles, and he dropped into a crouch, wanting to explode, wanting to run. Knowing none of it would do any good. Boom! The house shuddered, and his thoughts went to the Rat King's letter, shoved into his bag, wherever that was. The ultimatum was clear. Ally with Maradrina against Valcata or face war and blockades like those Maradrina had held 15 years prior, lifted only with the signing of the treaty. They had been the darkest of times. Maradrina had kept anyone from landing at Southwatch for 2 years, completely shutting down trade. Nothing could be shipped through the bridge, and Ithacana's revenues dried up entirely. Without them, there had been no way to feed his people, to keep them provisioned, to keep them alive. Not with violent storms driving fishermen from the seas more days than not. Famine had swept Ithacana. Plague, too. And the idea of going back to that. Yet the alternative was join with a man who'd been plotting against him in the worst sort of ways, to join a war he wanted no part of. It was profoundly tempting to formally ally with Valcata for spite. Ithacana's coffers were strong enough to buy what the kingdom needed for a year or more with no additional revenue from the bridge. Between Southwatch's shipbreakers and the strength of Valcata's fleets, Silas's armies wouldn't have a chance. Yet such an action would place all the suffering on Maradrina's people. Laura's people. Condemning them to starvation would make him the villain the Magpie had painted. Arryn would become the man Laura had been raised to hate, but to cede to her father's request would mean jeopardizing Ithacana when Valcata came for retribution. There was no solution. His father's voice danced through Arryn's head, words shouted at his mother. Ithacana makes no alliances. We are neutral. We have to be, or war will come for us. But like his mother before him, Arryn now believed the time for neutrality had come to an end. Except there was a difference between desiring an alliance and allowing its terms to be dictated by another man. Arryn wavered. Then in two strides, he was at his desk. Flipping open the hidden compartment, Arryn extracted the letter he'd started to Silas those months ago. Staring at the polite greeting and appropriate honorifics, he shoved the page aside, reaching for a clean sheet. Silas, Ithacana will not cease trade with Valcata. Should you wish to see an end to their naval aggression, I suggest you desist in your attacks on Valkata's northern border. Only with peace between your two nations does Meridrina have the chance to return to health and prosperity. As to your insinuation that Ithacana has not held to the spirit of the agreement between our nations, we feel it necessary to point out your hypocrisy in making such a claim. In the best interests of both our peoples, we will forgive your schemes and allow Meridrina to continue to trade at Southwatch Market under the terms agreed upon. Let it be said, however, that should you seek to retaliate against your spy, Ithacana will take it as an act of aggression against its queen, and the alliance between our kingdoms will be irrevocably severed. Choose wisely, Auron. He stared at the letter, knowing he could never tell Lara what he had written. Her life had been dedicated to easing the plight of her people, and she wouldn't forgive him threatening those very same people for the sake of protecting her. Yet there could be no other way to ensure Silas wouldn't harm her. God help him if he was forced to follow through. Rising, Auron stepped out into the hallway, walking until he found Eli. Bring this to the barracks when the storm eases. Tell Jor it's to be sent immediately to the king of Meridrina. Retreating to his rooms, Auron opened the door to the courtyard and stepped out into the storm.
Lara landed with a thump on her knees, knife gripped in one hand. Darkness surrounded her. Thunder rumbled through the room, followed by two flashes of lightning that faintly illuminated the outline of a window. The wood floor beneath her was polished smooth, and the air was thick with moisture and the earthy scent of jungle. Hot tears ran down her face, and she scrubbed them off her cheeks. The moment she'd returned to Midwatch, she'd intended to find her way into Auron's room to destroy the damnable proof of her betrayal before it could go any further. To do it without him knowing, because she could never let him read those words. It was one thing for him to know that she'd lied to him, manipulated him, deceived him. Quite another, to read the proof of it. For him to see every moment that he'd believed a connection was growing between the two of them had been a strategy to gain the information she needed. That, after all they'd been through, she had still made the choice to destroy him that fateful night he'd kissed her in the mud. Not only was it unforgivable, the amount of hurt it would cause him to read it, she couldn't let that happen. Not when simply destroying the pages would eliminate all the evidence, would make it as though it had never happened. Her plan had been to lightly drug Auron at dinner, then to sneak into his room and start a small fire on his desk that could easily be blamed on a candle left too close to a piece of paper. She could then claim to have smelled the smoke, her screams and pounding on the door enough to wake him and alert the staff. Between the flames and the water it would take to douse them, all the stationery bearing her invisible message would be ruined beyond use. It was a dangerous, damaging plan, but she'd rather chance burning the Midwatch house to the ground than risk Auron questioning why all of his stationery had mysteriously gone missing. But while Lara had waited for the dinner hour, exhaustion had taken over, and she'd fallen asleep on the clean, soft sheets of her bed. Now the scents of dinner were wafting under the door, and she wasn't the least bit prepared. "You can fix this," she muttered, climbing to her feet, pulling on one of her silken Meridrinian dresses and running a brush through her hair. Lara's mind raced as she shoved a vial of narcotic into her bracelet, planning to give him enough to put him out, but not so much that he couldn't be roused. Out in the hallway, she hurried toward the shuttered dining room, certain she'd find Auron there. He was not one to neglect his stomach, but there was only Eli, who started at the sight of her. "We thought you'd want dinner in your room, my lady," he said. "Do you wish to eat here instead?" "Thank you, but I'm not hungry. Do you know where he is?" There was only one he in this house. "His rooms, my lady. He didn't want dinner." Logic and her training whispered that she should wait for another night, another opportunity. Better to do that than risk being caught. Yet Lara found herself instead hurrying down the opposite hall to Auron's room, her bare feet silent on the cool floor. She knocked and waited. No answer. She tried the handle and for once found it unlocked. Arin? Arin was nowhere in sight. This was her chance. She could pretend she found the fire burning. Securing the door, Laura bolted the heavy desk, immediately spying the open stationery box. And the beginnings of a letter composed to her father. Her heart in her throat, Laura stared at the few lines of dried ink addressed to her father. How Arin could stomach being so polite to his enemy was beyond her. Though perhaps that he couldn't stomach it was the reason the letter wasn't finished. A purr caught her attention, and she looked down as Arin's cat began to wind his huge body between her legs, nearly knocking her over. An idea, one better and far less damaging than a fire, jumped into her head. Sorry for this, Vitex, but I need your help. She staged the scene, placing the box on its side on the floor, and then splattering the letter with ink, leaving the well overturned on the rest of the pages so they were soaked through and unusable. But not before counting the stack. 25 blank pages, plus the unfinished letter made for 26. Luring Vitex over, she scratched his ears, gently taking hold of one of his paws and using it to make distinctive prints through the ink. Realizing what she was doing, the cat hissed at her and pulled away, leaving a trail across the room as he went. Every muscle in her body twitched, and with a ragged gasp, Laura sank to her knees, staring at what had been the culmination of all her efforts, of all her training, of her life, remembering the way she'd felt the last time she'd held those pages, knowing that the damning words she'd written would save her people. How wrong she'd been. Yet with them gone, so went the weight she'd been carrying since she'd learned the truth of her father's deception. What she'd done before, it had been awful, the worst sort of betrayal. But it had been motivated by lies that had filled her ears almost her entire life, whereas turning on her father now was an act driven by the truth. What she was doing now was her own choice. And though Laura knew that she'd painted a target on her back, that her father's assassins would never stop hunting her, for the first time in her life she felt free. Driven by some strange sixth sense, she drifted into the antechamber and opened the door to the courtyard, the wind buffeting her with the force of a giant. Stepping outside, she found herself in a hell of wind and rain. The air shrieked as it circled the courtyard, carrying leaves and branches and rain that bit into her bare arms and slapped her cheeks. The tempest was deafening in its fury, multi-pronged bolts lancing across the sky, the thunder battering her eardrums. In the midst of it stood Arin. He was shirtless and barefoot, staring up at the sky, seemingly heedless of the tempest circling around him, or of the danger he was in. A branch rippled from one of the trees to hurtle across the yard, exploding against the side of the house. Arin! But the storm drowned out her voice. It was impossible to keep her feet as she struggled down the path, knocked over time and again by gusts of wind that threatened to lift her into the air, her hair whipped in a wild frenzy, blinding her. But not for a heartbeat did she consider turning back. Regaining her feet on the slick stones, she lunged. The winds died as her hands closed on Arin's arms, as though the world itself gave a sigh and relaxed, the debris falling softly to the ground and the rain easing into a gentle patter against her skin. Laura? Releasing a ragged breath, she tilted her face up to find Arin staring down at her, his expression bewildered, as though he couldn't comprehend how she'd come to be standing before him. Is it over? She asked, finding it difficult to breathe, and even more difficult to think. The storm. No, we're in the eye of it now. The eye of the storm. Her chest tightened. What are you doing out here? The hard muscles of his forearms flexed beneath her grip.
I needed it.
Instinctively, she understood what he meant. Most people sought solace from danger, but for him, the danger was solace, the rush of adrenaline that cleared his mind, that wiped away the uncertainty that plagued every decision he made as king. The fear of erring, the consequences of doing so. In the storm, he knew his path. She understood because she felt the same way. You could have died today, doing what you did.
You would have died if I hadn't.
His hands closed around her arms, and though his palms were feverishly hot, Laura shivered. You might have been better off if I had. His grip tightened.
Do you honestly believe that I could have ever forgiven myself if I had stood there and watched you drown?
But what I did
is in the past. It's behind us now.
Her pulse was a dull roar in her ears as his words sank in. Auron had forgiven her. How he'd found it in his heart to do so, she couldn't understand. But there it was. What she'd wanted, more than anything, but hadn't had the hope to wish for.
Do you want to leave Ithacana? Because if that's what it takes for you to be happy, I'll set you on any shore you wish with everything you need to make a life for yourself.
Laura had planned to leave. Her father's assassins would soon be on her heels, and she hadn't believed there was anything to be gained by staying. A relationship between the two of them would never have a chance. Auron would inevitably discover the truth about her and would never forgive her for it. But Auron knew the truth, and against all odds, he had forgiven her. Now the thought of turning her back on this place, of turning her back on him, was the worst future she could imagine. You can't let me leave, Ithacana. Her throat felt tight, and the words came out breathy and strange. I know too much. You'd be risking too much. His eyes burned into hers, and never in her life had she felt like someone else saw her so perfectly.
I can let you go because I trust you.
She couldn't breathe. I don't want to leave. The words were a truth dug from the depths of her heart. She did not want to leave Ithacana. She did not want to leave him. She wanted to stay, to fight and sweat and bleed for him and his harsh, wild, and beautiful kingdom. The storm circled, watching, but leaving them untouched for this one moment. Auron's hands loosened on her arms. And for one terrifying heartbeat, she thought he'd let her go, that he wanted her to go. Instead, his fingers traced up the backs of her arms, the light touch leaving rivers of sensation in their wake. Gentle strokes up and down, as though he were calming some wild thing that was apt to bite, or testing the waters. His hands grazed the sides of her breasts, and Laura exhaled a soft breath of air as his thumbs hooked on the straps of her dress, easing them down as he bent, his lips brushing one naked shoulder, then the other. A whimper escaped her as Auron pulled her damp hair away, exposing her neck even as he kissed her collarbone, her throat, the line of her jaw. Only his grip on her dress keeping it from falling away and leaving her naked before him. Laura wanted to touch him, wanted to feel his sleek skin stretched over hard muscles, but she was afraid, because she knew to do so would be her undoing. There would be no turning back. Auron's lips paused, and she held her breath, waiting for them to descend on her own, even as she wondered whether, if she allowed herself to sink into this hot pool of desire, she'd ever surface again. Whether she'd want to. But he only rested his forehead against hers.
I need you to say that you want this, Laura. That you're allowing this because you choose to, not because it was forced upon you.
Her chest burned, emotion so intense it hurt surging through her. She pulled back so their eyes locked. I want this. And because that wasn't the sum of it, she added, I want you. The storm returned with a vengeance as their lips collided, but Laura barely felt the buffeting winds as Auron lifted her against him, his hands gripping her hips as she wrapped her legs around his waist, her arms sliding around his neck. His mouth was hot, his tongue slick against hers, the rain drenching their skin as he carried her through the tempest and into the shelter of the house. Inside, his feet slid on the wet tile and they slammed against the wall, knocking what remained on the shelves to the floor. He braced himself, his hands to either side of her, his breath hot against her throat as Laura ground against him, her heels digging into his back as she pulled him closer, wanting nothing between them, even as the friction of his belt against her dragged a moan from her lips. her back arched until only her head pressed against the polished wood of the walls, and her dress, the skirt already bunched around her waist, pulled down to expose the tops of her breasts. She felt Auron's breath catch.
God, you're beautiful, insufferable and venom-tongued, and the most incredible woman I've set eyes on.
His words made her thighs slick.
Door, shut the damn door.
Yes, your majesty.
He slipped his tongue into her mouth, tasting her thoroughly, before allowing her to slide to the ground, the hardness of him pressing against her stomach before he turned to wrench on the door and shut out the storm. The heavy bolt in place, Auron turned, hazel eyes predatory as he stalked toward her, ever the hunter. Lara stepped backward into the bedroom, daring him to follow, luring him in because she was not and never would be anyone's prey. Her calves hit the solid wood of his bed, and she stared him down, stopping him in his tracks. The howl of wind was muffled now, and over it she could hear him breathing, each inhale and exhale ratcheting up her needs as her eyes roved over his body, marking the way the muscles in his jaw flexed as he watched her with equal focus. Reaching blindly for the lantern, Lara turned the flame up high and then set it to one side, her eyes never leaving his. Clasping hold of the sodden bodice of her dress, the neckline clinging to her peaked nipples, she slowly peeled the silk from her body, discarding the garment on the floor. Then she lay back on the bed, resting her weight on her elbows. With deliberate slowness, Lara allowed her knees to fall open. She watched his control snap, watched as he held his ground only because of the strength of her stare, his desire apparent against the rain-soaked trousers that were all he wore. "Take them off," she commanded, his low laugh making her skin prickle with the need to have his hands on her once more. He unbuckled his belt, then hooked his thumbs over it and pushed, the weight of the knife fastened to it, dragging his trousers to the floor where he kicked them aside. This time it was Laura's turn to catch her breath as she took in the hard length of him, for while she'd seen him naked before, it had never been like this. Her thighs trembled beneath the floodgate of her need to have him, and she nodded once. In three strides, he was across the room, but rather than pinning her to the bed, as she'd thought he would, he fell to his knees before her. Ithacana and its king, bent to nothing and no one, but he bent for her. Auron kissed the inside of her left knee, then her right knee, lingering on an old scar that ran halfway up her inner thigh. His hands, rough with calluses earned defending his kingdom, caught hold of her legs. And with her quivering beneath his grip, he lowered his face and slid his tongue inside of her. Her hips bucked, but he held her against the bed, licking and sucking at the apex of her thighs until a moan tore from her lips. She fell back against the sheet, hands reaching for him, pulling at him, but he only lifted his head long enough to give her a feral smirk before sliding his fingers into the spot his tongue had just vacated. Lara's back bowed, and she grabbed at the edge of the bed, the world tilting as he caressed the inside of her, his mouth consuming her, the pressure building deep in her core. Lightning flashed as his teeth grazed her and the world shattered, her vision fracturing as waves of pleasure washed over her body until she was left gasping and trembling. Auron didn't move for a long moment, then, with tenderness that broke her heart, he kissed her stomach before resting his cheek against it, her fingers tangling in his hair. But she wasn't done with him, nor he with her. Stirring, he climbed over her with the grace of a panther on the hunt. Catching hold of her hands, he pinned her arms over her head, his knuckles digging into the mattress. For a heartbeat, she resisted, pushing against his far superior strength, and then her body yielded. Not to him, but to herself. To what she wanted. Her life had been spent as an unwitting pawn in her father's machinations, but no longer. Every victory or mistake, every tender touch or fit of violence, they would be hers now. She would own them. She would own this moment. Lifting her head, she kissed him, and felt him shudder as she locked her legs around his waist, drawing him down so their bodies pressed together.